Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. On Monday, I returned back from visiting my family in Seattle. And yeah, I spent about 4.5 days there. I very much appreciated my time there. This is the third time I visited my sister's house in Seattle, and my parents are there, and my brother and his family are 4 blocks away, so it's the whole clan. And yeah, I now have a total of 4 nephews and 1 niece between my 2 siblings. So seeing the youngest, I think, is 9 months now. Seeing the family. And it's actually a very pleasant family to visit. My parents are both solid Dhamma practitioners, and so I stay in the shrine room, and I don't, maybe they pulled 1 or 2 things out, I'm not sure, but they didn't have to decorate, I don't think they decorated it anything special, but there's a Buddha image there and some candles. And there are 3 8x10 suttas written in calligraphy on the wall. And so there they are. And the 3 of them are, yeah, the one of them is the 5 recollections. The other one, and the second one, is the Mangala Sutta, the highest blessings. And the third is Subrahma's verses from the Deva Sanghita. So, yeah. Quite appreciated those teachings on the wall. Some partially unexpected highlights of my visit was how much time I spent with my best friend from college, who also lives in Seattle. And I've known him for about 19 years. And we were meditating together back then. Different practices, and our lives have evolved differently over the years. But by the end of this visit, I ended up with a deeper understanding of what Lion is doing. That's his name, Lion. And I think he understood more about what I'm doing. And deeper levels of, I would say, mutual understanding and respect than any other time in those 19 years. That was profoundly satisfying. And as for me understanding him, well, Lion's project is bringing visionary community to Seattle And I've seen how much progress he's made at that in 1 year. It's not easy. But, yeah, he went from living by himself to living in a group house with 8 people and another branch group house with 4. And, yeah, very... And even though there's no one coherent vision for his house yet, everyone's interested in sort of that area. And so I visited there twice, and he came to my parents' house once. And as for him understanding me, a week ago after the meal, which he shared with me, I think it's the first time he ever saw me use an alms bowl. Then we went into the room where I stayed, and we stood, and he read all of these quotes on the wall, and we talked about them. And just from the beginning, just recognizing that, one, in order to communicate with people, it's important. One, I think that's about Dhamma, it's important to communicate not from sort of, the books say this, but that doesn't mean a whole lot to most people, but instead communicate about what you find inspiring. But then the other thing that's important to recognize is that however inspiring you may find it, someone else will likely perceive it differently than you do. And it's important to recognize that. And so for the theme sort of tonight, I thought I would talk a bit about each one of those 3 suttas, even though I'm not sure I'm going to be able to find a unifying thread besides the fact that they're all posted on the wall in my parents' shrine room. But they certainly helped Lion and I talk about what inspires me about Buddhist practice, and I think he certainly connected with it, and he even told some of his insights to some people at his house when we went there the next day. So to begin, I'll just start with those 5 recollections, which are found in the chanting book. And the English translation we use is, I am of the nature to age, I have not gone beyond aging. I am of the nature to sicken, I have not gone beyond sickness. I am of the nature to die, I have not gone beyond dying. All that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. And the 5th one, I am the owner of my kama, heir to my kama, born of my kama, related to my kama, abide supported by my kama. Whatever kama I shall do, for good or for ill, of that I will be the heir. And so, I explained these to Lion, saying that the Buddha recommended that everyone, whether lay or ordained, male or female, recollect these 5 things frequently. And Lion looked at them and said, yeah. I find the first 3 of these pretty depressing. And Buddhists like to contemplate this way, paraphrasing, but it doesn't do so much for me. And I said, oh, okay. Well, and I said, yeah, my understanding is that these recollections are, yeah, this is, these are to be recollected when you're feeling lazy. And why? Well, thought about that. Well, wow. That really changes things. Because, yeah, I can, you know, I could easily think, yeah, I'm 38 years old. I don't have much to worry about. Everything's going great for me. But, yeah, if I, paraphrasing again, if I thought about these, then maybe that would dispel laziness if I was being lazy. Oh, that was a change for him, and I think it illustrates how it's really important to present things in context, because yeah, if you, some people do find those depressing, but then what I also found interesting was the next day when Lion and some of his, some of them I think lived in his house. Others were just invites for people who had come for a event called Zeg Forum, which is a group process event that happens at his house every 2 weeks. I was very fortunate to be able to go. But afterwards we were talking, and I was the only one in robes there, and so it was pretty natural to talk about Buddhism. And Lion explained his insight into these five recollections, that wow, yeah, these things are to be contemplated when you're feeling lazy. They're an antidote to a problem. But then another person reflected, well, maybe they're deeper than that. Because even if you're not feeling lazy, there's still part of the mind that denies this. It's a place it doesn't want to look. And again, paraphrasing, but for true wholeness, it's important to take this in, because otherwise you'll always be afraid of it, even though it won't be conscious. And so, yeah, the discussion went to how we hide things from ourselves and how that causes problems. Someone mentioned and I don't know where the quote comes from, some psychological aphorism, that you're only as sick as your secrets. You know, your problems are, the true root of our problems is ignorance, what we choose not to see. So, yeah, taking in the nature of the human condition, that's what the first four of the five recollections are about. And for myself, I've reflected on the five, I've done the five recollections. I did them every night when I was a layperson for probably 3 to 4 years before I came to a Bayagiri monastery, and have continued, actually, these days it's twice a day. And I find, at this point I find them Yeah, deeply energizing. I don't even know if I can quite put it into words. My intuition is that genuine spirituality begins here. This is the mystics of all traditions recollect these things in one way or another. And I remember talking with Father Damien over when the one time I visited Mount Tabor, the neighboring Ukrainian Uniate monastery. And we were talking about just monastic life, and I mentioned these things, and he knew exactly what I was talking about. And he said, yeah, you know, there was a time when to contemplate these things, I decided, yeah, I'll go lie in a freshly dug grave for a couple hours. Yep. That's it. Another passage that was on the wall of my parents' shrine room relates to this, and this is Subrahma's verses from the second chapter of the Sanyutta Nikaya. I think it might even be number 17. So Sanyutta Nikaya 2:17. And this begins with the Devaputta, the young Deva, young angel, Subrahma, addressing the Buddha in verse. Always frightened is this mind. This mind is always anxious about unarisen problems and about arisen ones as well. If there exists release from fear, being asked, please declare it to me. And just to pause here, Subrahma, this is another statement of the sort of existential human condition, this time not phrased in terms of, not explained in terms of the problems of the body, growing old, aging, and dying, but more in the problems of the mind, that even if you get what you want, you'll worry about losing it. And if you don't get what you want, well, that's suffering already. I think. And I think it's really easy to underestimate the suffering of being comfortable. Because when you are comfortable, part of you knows that, right, well, I'm comfortable, but that's because conditions are good. And I don't know, I'm not confident that maybe I'll break down if conditions change. And it's this underlying uneasiness. I think it was, there's a Mark Twain quote, which is, I don't think I'll get it exactly, but he said something to the effect of, I have experienced many calamities in my life, most of which never actually happened. And that's how it is. We suffer over all the problems that haven't happened yet. And the Buddha's response is very short, very simple. Not apart from renunciation and not apart from renunciation and enlightenment, not apart from restraint of all the senses, Not apart from relinquishing all, do I see any safety for living beings. And the Buddha was, the first thing to note is that the Buddha was, could keenly discern the acumen of his listeners. And the Buddha's response goes straight to the heart of things, which indicates that Subrahma was wholeheartedly asking his question. He wasn't looking for a shortcut. And yeah, just a very simple statement that if you cling to anything, you'll suffer. And so, there is no safety apart from relinquishment, which was the fourth topic of the fourth attitude that Ajahn Pasano spoke about in the last Dhamma talk. And my friend Lion picked this one up immediately. He liked Subrahma's question and the Buddha's answer. And Bhikkhu Bodhi actually has written an essay about this one also. Perhaps nowadays there aren't so many suttas which speak directly to the problem of fear the way this one does. And there's certainly a lot of fear in the world these days. And learning how to relate to that fear skillfully can be a major motivation in our practice. And then the third sutta on my parents' wall is the Mangala Sutta. And when it's actually on my parents' wall, it has only the first four or five verses. And my friend Lion had an insight that I didn't about the relation between these two. He looked at the last verse, or the last of the five recollections. I am the owner of my kama, heir to my kama, born of my kama, related to my kama, abide, supported by my kama. Whatever kama I shall do, for good or for ill, of that I'll be the heir. He looked at that and said, hey, the Mangala Sutta here is an expansion on that. And I think he's right. This sutta is also spoken by the Buddha in response to the question of a deva. But this deva is asking the Buddha, both devas and humans ever long for happiness. What then are the highest blessings? Or the, I believe that's, and the word for blessing there is mangala. Blessing is perhaps not the Mangala has more of a sense of protection, and the deva might have been asking the Buddha for, say, a magic formula or an amulet, which you could call those mangala, sort of a magical protection. But instead, the Buddha basically replies that your own skillful action, that's the highest protection. And my friend Lion connected, he knew that kama means action. And so you want to be the owner of your own skillful action. And the Mangala Sutta describes ever increasing degrees of refinement of action. I think I was just recollecting this in meditation, and it's something we recite probably once a week as a group. But I remember in this very room, Bhikkhu Bodhi, who translated all three of the suttas that I'm actually talking about, speaking, he was giving a discourse line by line on the Mangala Sutta and describing just how beautiful it is. And so I thought, I'm not going to keep us up all night trying to go line by line. But what gives this its beauty is just this, is its comprehensiveness and its well-orderedness. And so at the risk of repeating what we've heard so many times, I think I'll just go through it. I invite you to listen as if it were a symphony, because this is as beautiful as Bach. Avoiding those of foolish ways, associating with the wise, and honoring those worthy of honor, these are the highest blessings. Living in places of suitable kinds, with the fruits of past good deeds, and guided by the rightful way, these are the highest blessings. Accomplished in learning and craftsman's skills, with discipline highly trained, and speech that is true and pleasant to hear, these are the highest blessings. Providing for mother and father's support, and cherishing family, and ways of work that harm no being, these are the highest blessings. Generosity and a righteous life, offering help to relatives and kin, and acting in ways that leave no blame, these are the highest blessings. Steadfast in restraint and shunning evil ways, associating with the wise, these are the highest blessings. Respectfulness and of humble ways, contentment and gratitude, and hearing the teachings frequently taught, these are the highest blessings. Patience and willingness to accept one's faults, seeing venerated seekers of the truth, and sharing often the words of Dhamma, these are the highest blessings. Ardent committed to the holy life, seeing for oneself the noble truths, and the realization of Nibbana, these are the highest blessings. Although involved in worldly tasks, unshaken the mind remains, sorrowless, spotless, secure, these are the highest blessings. They who live according, what's the last one? They who live by following this path know victory wherever they go, and every place for them is safe, these are the highest blessings. Oh, there it is. I thought I would just talk a little bit about the second to last verse. Bhikkhu Bodhi went through our chanting book and explained where it wasn't quite right, or where it was in his mind totally off. And the translation in our chanting book is designed to be read by people who are very new to Buddhism, and therefore it errs on the side of being more understandable to newcomers than on being totally accurate to the Pali itself. And so in particular, that last one, which I used although involved in worldly tasks, that was originally even although involved in worldly ways, which is Bhikkhu, which really, you know, Bhikkhu Bodhi said, that's not right. It gives the wrong impression. The Pali is a putasa thamma lokehi, which I might, one way to translate it that might even get the meter would be although touched by the world. And this brings up the concept of the worldly winds. Pleasure and pain, gain and loss, praise and blame, fame and ill repute. And so this is describing one who has realized Nibbana. Well, such a one is still touched by those eight things. So, yeah, although touched by the world, unshaken the mind remains. Chittang yasa nakampati, or something close to that. I believe it uses the same shaking word for shaking as is in the Dhammacakka Sutta. The mind is solid amidst what blows around almost all of us, which is why they're called the worldly winds. And then asokang wirajang kemang, which, so you could say, yeah, sorrowless, passionless is the other, would be another translation for viragang. But again, passionless sounds not good to someone who isn't familiar with the Buddha Dhamma. So the translation uses spotless, which is also a possibility. Kemang, yeah, true peace. Etang mangalamuttamang. These are the highest blessings. Again, that sense of protection. And so here we've come to the refuge from both the problem of this decaying body and the problem of the mind that's always afraid. And for myself, this is contemplating this brings a real sense of awe, which is quite useful for settling the mind in meditation. But back to my conversation with Lion, one really has to pay attention to how these things land in your own mind, because much as I love the contemplation of Nibbana, other people just find it overwhelming. You know, Nibbana is something I'm supposed to attain, and I can't. And it's just like everything else in my life that people have expected me to do, that I can't do. So, dukkha. And if that's the case, then it's probably best to find another object of contemplation. In a way, ultimately we have to, we can use external teachers, and the Buddha Dhamma is vast, but we have to learn how to find and use the parts of the Buddha's teaching which will help us work on all the different sections described in the Mangala Sutta and be a true protection for us now and into the future. So I offer these words for your reflection tonight. Sadhu, 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 anumodhami.
You missed one.
I missed one?
On page 32. Said by her that the blessed one was
staying at Sawati, residing at the Jeta's Grove, in Anatta Pindika's park. Then in the dark of the night, a radiant Deva illuminated all Jeta's Grove. She bowed down low before the Blessed One. Then standing to one side, she said, "Devas are concerned for happiness and ever long for peace. The same is true for humankind. What then are the highest blessings? Avoiding those of foolish ways, associating with the wise, and honoring those worthy of honor. These are the highest blessings. Living in places of suitable kinds, with the fruits of past good deeds, and guided by the rightful way. These are the highest blessings, accomplished in learning and craftsman skills, with discipline highly trained, and speech that is true and pleasant to hear. These are the highest blessings, providing for mother and father's support, and cherishing family, and ways of work that harm no being. These are the highest blessings, generosity and a righteous life, offering help to relatives and kin, and acting in ways that leave no blame. These are the highest blessings, steadfast in restraint, and shunning evil ways, avoiding intoxicants that dull the mind, and heedfulness in all things that arise. These are the highest blessings, respectfulness and of humble ways, contentment and gratitude, and hearing the Dhamma frequently taught. These are the highest blessings, patience and willingness to accept one's faults, seeing venerated seekers of the truth, and sharing often the words of Dhamma. These are the highest blessings, ardent committed to the holy life, seeing for oneself the noble truths, and the realization of Nibbana. These are the highest blessings, although involved in worldly tasks, unshaken the mind remains, and beyond all sorrow spotless secure. These are the highest blessings, they who live by following this path, know victory wherever they go, and every place for them is safe. These are the highest blessings.